You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Dan Feltman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons. You can follow us on Audioboom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feltman NBA. The Pistons had their sixth and final preseason game, losing 103-92 to the Raptors. The Pistons looked a step slow throughout. They were a little bit out-physical. They just didn't seem to really have it together, and Stan Van Gundy said as much after the game. At the same time, he criticized his team's effort in this one. He also praised their effort throughout training camp and the preseason overall. So I do think that adds credibility to him calling out effort, as does his downplaying of effort when it's not a real thing. He has a history of this. When coaches, I'll start with coaches, sometimes when coaches are just out-coached or out-talented, you know, when teams are out-talented, there's not much they can do. Or when coaches are out-coached and they don't know what to do, they don't know what adjustments to make, they'll put it on their players' effort because that's sort of a vague thing that, yeah, you can blame that. It was the effort. And it's not always that. I mean, sometimes the coach just cannot make the proper adjustments because he's not of that level. He's out-coached by the guy down the sideline. Or sometimes players just don't have enough talent. And you don't really want to admit that because that's kind of like, well, even if we try harder next time, then what? That doesn't mean we're going to win. So there's reasons people play up effort, why coaches play up effort. And in the same way where coaches who get out-coached play up effort, sometimes the media, and I'm sure I've been guilty of this myself at times, puts too much on effort because it's hard to diagnose what else went wrong. Like, the level NBA players play at is very high. The technicalities of their systems are very complex. And it's hard to evaluate sometimes who was doing right, doing well, who was doing poorly, and, you know, who made the right reads, who didn't. And you could just say, well, they weren't trying hard enough because it's vague and seems like it could be right. And Van Gundy has a history more than any coach that I've seen. I'm sure he's not the only one, but more than any coach I've seen, who he'll tell media members if they ask about effort. If he does not think effort was a problem, he'll say it. You know, he'll have his players back in that way. So that adds credibility here when he calls out the effort. I don't know how much he's dwelling on it. It's never encouraging to see, you know, less than full effort. But even at six games, this is a long preseason. It's a long training camp. It's a lot of time. Like, I think players are ready for the regular season. You need these games to mean something, to have a little extra juice. On opening night, I'm sure there's going to be a ton of excitement for every team in the league. If the Pistons are not competing at a higher level on opening night, that'd be disappointing. And so you have this effort problem that coincides with the game you're playing against the Raptors, who are a pretty polished team. I think a better team than the Pistons. Not by a huge amount, but enough where I think it's clear they're a better team. They're a cohesive team. A lot of their core, especially Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, who were the best two Raptors on the court last night, have played together for a while. They have fantastic chemistry. So they were particularly able to expose the Pistons' lack of effort. Don't think it's a big deal, you know, especially given that the rest of the preseason, everything seemed fine. But that's what happened. That was the game last night. I do think it could be a big deal for one player in particular, though. Stan Van Gundy, when talking about Lorenzo Brown, said that, you know, he was like a lot of players on the Pistons, where his effort wasn't very good. And so that's not what Lorenzo Brown needs. And the stakes are very high for him. He and Ray McCallum are competing for the third point guard spot. And with that comes a spot on the roster. This is the 15th spot. It's going to be one of those two almost assuredly. Like, it'd be shocking, like beyond shocking, if there's any other scenario, then one of those two is going to make the team. The other one is going to go to Grand Rapids in the D League. And not only is this a matter of, you know, the third spot and that, like, just to make the stakes even higher, it's a rotation spot, at least to start the season, because Reggie Jackson is out. Ish Smith is going to start, and one of these two, McCallum or Brown, is going to be the backup and get regular minutes until Reggie Jackson gets healthy. So there is a lot of stake here. Primarily, I'm sure for both of them, it's an NBA contract. It's making an NBA salary. The difference between that and what they can get in the D League is huge, huge. You know, at NBA salary, they're even at the minimum, they're going to be making a little less than $1 million per year, either one of them. In the D League, they'd be getting about $30,000 per year. So the difference is huge. So in that light, yeah, Lorenzo Brown not giving an impressive amount of effort on D is troubling, because that was going to be his advantage. Ray McCallum is a better ball handler, a better shooter, just somebody you'd be a little bit more comfortable running your offense. Where Brown's advantage was going to be defense, that he's taller and can just make more of a difference defensively through his length, and that has to come with effort. I don't think he's done enough. He had a little bit better of a passing game last night than he had prior, but I don't think that's going to be enough. I at this point, I'm guessing it's going to be McCallum, and I do think McCallum had the leg up from the moment Reggie Jackson got hurt, just because Brown made more sense as a change of pace, as somebody who could be a defensive help when Reggie Jackson and Ish Smith couldn't get the job done. And I think it's going to be Ray McCallum as somebody you can depend a little more on. Not that you can depend on him per se. Like, this is still a tough job for him to step into a rotation. I'm not sure he's up to that. And the Pistons didn't want to put him in that role. That's why they were looking at these guys to be their third point guard. And yeah, injuries happen. It's not shocking that they need to be the second, but it's not the ideal scenario. So I think it's going to be McCallum, but I do think it's very close. I would not be surprised either way, and we'll definitely have coverage of what it's going to be once Stan Van Gundy makes his decision. One decision Van Gundy already made, a very, very easy one. The Pistons exercised their third-year team option on Stanley Johnson's rookie contract. Essentially, what that means is the Pistons are going to pay Stanley Johnson about $3 million next year, rather than let him hit free agency. Seem like a good idea? Yeah, I think so too. I mean, these are almost always no-brainers. When teams draft a player, there's a commitment to them, and the whole system is set up to make first-round picks vastly underpaid, and that has become even more so because the rookie-scale salaries were set in a different environment when the salary cap was so much lower, and there was no mechanism to kick those up when the new national TV deal came in. So now players like Stanley Johnson are making such a lower percentage of the cap. Like, it went from a complete no-brainer to like something beyond even that. And around this time next year, you'll hear me talking about the Pistons picking up their fourth-year team option on Stanley Johnson. That's going to pay him about $3.9 million the following year. The options on rookie-scale contracts, this option picked up now is not for this season that's just about to start. It's for the next season, for Stanley Johnson's third season. He's about to enter his second season. And then around this time next year, before the October 31st deadline, barring some change in the collective bargaining agreement and how this works, which I'd be surprised by, then it's going to be the following. It'd be for his fourth year. And it'll be another bargain, and then they could either extend his contract or let him hit restricted free agency. So either way, Stanley Johnson is locked up for one more year, and when the time comes, it'll be one more year after that. I'm sure he'll complete his four-year contract with the Pistons, and then we'll see what happens. But he's just so paid so little that there's no way he's not going to be completing this four-year contract, barring catastrophic injury. And then even then, he's so cheap, like, it's hard to justify turning it down. And here's the catch. Like, as if this weren't already easy enough, consider this. If you turn down a player's rookie-scale team option, that's the most you can pay him in free agency. So, for argument's sake, if the Pistons had turned down Stanley Johnson's option for next season, that $3 million or so dollar option, it's $3 million, let's call it $3.1 million, rounded off. Next year, next summer, he'd be an unrestricted free agent, And the most the Pistons could pay him would be $3.1 million. Other teams aren't bound by that. He'd get offers so much higher. Now, that's an easy case. But the Pacers ran into something like this with Solomon Hill. They turned down his team option, let him become a free agent, and in the interim, he blew up. Like, he got much better, and he became a player the Pelicans are paying millions and millions of dollars to. You know, a real significant free agent, and the Pacers couldn't do anything about it. They could have had him cheap just for a few million dollars for 1 year, and then, you know, he could have been a restricted free agent after that. For most rookies, it makes sense just to exercise it just in case. That's what the Pistons did with Reggie Bullock last year. They didn't know he was part of their long-term plans. They exercised it just in case. Because the downside is so much worse if you don't exercise it. And that's not even where Stanley Johnson is, because the Pistons know he's part of their long-term plans. So this is a no-brainer. Probably spent too much time discussing a move that should be very obvious. But I did want to explain to everybody, and you know, I know this is not all of you listening, but those of you listening who are not as familiar with the mechanics of these rookie scale contracts. Lastly, one more note before we get out of here. There was a little bit of momentum for Michael Beneteau potentially making the rotation, maybe even entering that mix with Darren Hilliard or Reggie Bullock to be the shooting guard, the primary shooting guard off the bench behind Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Stan Van Gundy put a little bit of a halt to that, saying it's probably going to be one of the veterans that, as much as Beneteau has impressed, he's not quite there. He's not quite reliable enough like either of those veterans. And we'll see if even either of those veterans makes the rotation. Van Gundy could easily go with 9 players to start the season. But if he goes with 10, it's not going to be Beneteau. And this one is less surprising. It's also not going to be Henry Ellenson. Just another rookie who's talented and has shown some nice things in the preseason, but isn't quite there. So we can scratch off any ideas about that. But there are a lot of big unknowns still. Who's going to get that third point guard job and the final roster spot? Which of Hilliard or Bullock, if either, is going to make the rotation, and we'll be covering that. I'm sure now that the preseason is over, that they're done with all their preseason games, the Pistons will start to make those determinations soon. I think both of those are very close calls, but the Pistons are going to have to make them one way or the other soon, and we'll be covering them. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can follow us on Audioboom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at DanFeldmanNBA. Also, check out todaysfastbreak.com for NBA news and analysis. Thanks for listening.